All right, I'm going to try to fly through this quickly because I want to make sure we have enough time for discussion. And my name is David Malbranch. I'm an assistant professor over at Emory University Division of General Medicine. I see patients at an HIV clinic in downtown Atlanta, and then also do behavioral HIV prevention research. I have absolutely nothing to disclose. And I want to start off my presentation by talking about the current climate in the discussion of bisexual black men in the United States. So typically when this conversation starts, it's synonymous with the down low all the time. And the second point I'd like to make here is that this kind of a myopic media attention that we see. And I thought back in 2004 after the fallout from J.L. King being on Oprah, I thought that it would kind of trickle down once we had some more data and stuff, but it seems like within the past year there's been this resurgence of ignorance that has been perpetuated in the media. So from anywhere on The View where, you know, actors and journalists are purporting that they're HIV experts all of a sudden and they're experts on bisexuality, to Oprah's recent show revisiting the topic. Private Practice had a show with Rockman Dunbar. And then I heard that For Colored Girls actually had a story. One of the subplots was about a down low brother. But I haven't seen it and don't plan to unless someone pays me a whole lot of money. But the main message, actually, usually when you see these things, is black bisexuality equals down low, because it's never just not pathological or not secretive. And then being down low equals no condom use, and then that equals HIV risk to innocent black women. So a couple years ago, Brian asked me to kind of look at a lot of the literature and write a paper on this. So I did a pretty thorough literature review on what we knew about bisexual men and HIV, bisexual black men specifically. And what I found were kind of, I laid out into three general categories that I'll present to you today. One is current research and sampling issues, which there's plenty of. Two is the whole notion of sexual identification, same-sex behavior disclosure, and condom use, which is kind of at the crux of this whole down-low argument. If we take the definition of down-low to mean secretive, then the whole notion of this down-low thing is that a secretive sexual behavior is kind of covered by a sexual identity that one is purporting to have in public. So that's a very important part of it to look at. Then we also talk about the social context of bisexuality. So let me talk about current research and sampling issues first. One of the main problems is that there's vague definitions of what it means to be down low, or what that term actually means. And I've read a few studies that actually have included participants, and they've asked them the question, do you consider yourself on the down low? And if they say yes, then they're included in the study, without giving them an operational definition of what down low actually means. So it's up to the subjective interpretation of the participant. So that's a problem. And then I've seen other studies where it says it's based on the awareness of the term and self-identification. So are you aware of the term down low? Yes. Do you identify with that? Yes. Therefore, you're down low and you're included in the study. And then there's this inherent paradox of sampling down low men. If down low means covert and secretive, do I need to finish that sentence? If you're saying you have a sample of down low men, really? Okay. The other problem we see a lot of times with the sampling is that they often pool with exclusively MSM samples, and this is with bisexual men in general. You look at the historical literature from the 90s up till now, it's gay and bisexual. And then you'll see like maybe 500 exclusively gay or MSM people in the sample, and then maybe 30 bisexual. But the title says gay and bisexual, as if their social context and their realities are all the same. That's a problem as well. And then equating bisexual identity with behavior. So if you say you're bisexual, then that means you're engaging in bisexual behavior, even if you haven't seen any parts of a woman's anatomy since 1952. You're still, or man. And then there's also varying temporal definitions of bisexuality. If you look at the literature in some of these bisexual studies, some will say, have you had sex with both a man and a woman since 1978, in the past 5 years, in the past 10 years, in the past 6 months? So you really have to have a keen eye when you're looking at this literature so that the definitions are very distinct, so you know exactly what you're talking about. Let's move forward to sexual identification, same-sex behavior, disclosure, and condom use. Issues with definitions of bisexual, we do know that black bisexual men are more likely to identify as bisexual, even if they're exclusively homosexual, than their white counterparts. But we also actually know that the probability estimates from large probability-based sampling estimates of bisexual behavior among black men are actually low and can range anywhere from 0.5% to 2%. Now, convenient samples, you can see it up to 70% or even higher. But when you're looking at probability samples, generalizable samples, it's usually pretty low. Now, the whole issue of disclosure compared to white men, a lot of literature will support that there are lower rates of same-sex disclosure among black men to their colleagues, family, friends, female sexual partners, than their white counterparts. And then disclosure actually decreases with increased education. So interesting studies have demonstrated that when white men are followed who are bisexually active and their education level increases, they're more likely to disclose their same-sex behavior to all those social networks. For black men, it's actually the exact opposite. As education goes up, the rates of disclosure decreases, and that's another thing to talk about. And then this slide actually talks about the crux of the matter, which is when we're talking about HIV and STIs, that kind of stuff, we're looking at sexual identification, same-sex behavior disclosure, and condom use. Some of the points I want to make is that, first of all, few studies actually have exclusively bisexual samples. And even with the MSM samples, where they have a subset of men who are bisexually active, those are controversial as far as whether the bisexual men actually have more unprotected sex than their exclusively MSM counterparts. And then another point that doesn't get looked at a lot, the sexual behavior, we almost want to act like it's an all or none phenomenon and not look at the nuances of who the gender of the sexual partner is, and then also the relationship type. Is it your primary partner? Is that your boo that you're not using condoms with because you trust them more? Or is it your casual partner who in your mind you think you don't know that well, so you're gonna strap on a little more? When you start to actually peel away the layers of this, you see that it's a lot more complicated than do you just use condoms or do you not? And then there's a lot of research talking about among black bisexually active men compared with their white counterparts, they're more likely to identify as bisexual, correct, less likely to disclose their same sexual behavior to women, correct. But actually, there have been studies that show that they're equally likely to engage in unprotected anal sex with other men than their white counterparts. And then when compared to actually exclusively MSM samples, they're less likely to engage in unprotected receptive anal intercourse despite higher levels of so-called self-homophobia. So again, we have this argument that we hear a lot of times in the public health circles that if you have internalized homophobia, you're less likely to receive HIV prevention messages and thereby less likely to use condoms, which makes sense, but then when the data actually goes against it, you have to actually think of maybe are there other social and structural determinants, religious, cultural, geographical determinants that may be confounding these relationships. So it may be a little bit more complicated than that. One of the things we actually don't talk about enough is the social context of bisexuality. There's a heavy emphasis on bisexual equaling down low. Men are also described as almost as vectors of HIV transmission. If any of you have heard me talk, when I hear the conversations like on Oprah and in the media outlets, it's almost like black bisexual men are mosquitoes. And all they do is fly around and they inject other innocent people and draw their blood and then give them something at the same time. The only problem, well, there's a big problem with that, and the other problem with it is that the discussion is only about unidirectional risk. So there's this kind of heteronormative, homophobic assumption that the MSM are the only ones with sexually transmitted diseases that bisexuals bridge to innocent heterosexual women. What about the heterosexual women that have STIs, give it to the bisexual brothers, and they give it to the innocent MSM? It's like a Matrix kind of thing, you know, where you're just like, wow, I never thought that it actually could go both ways. There's always a pathological slant to defining bisexuality. So it's always about being hypermasculine, whatever that means. It's always in the context of incarceration because God knows that a brother who goes to jail actually never thought about having sex with another man unless he went to jail. It's situational, so only in the context of exchange of drugs or money. And then also the whole notion of internalized homophobia. There's also a reluctance to acknowledge sexual fluidity, that there's a journey to this. It's not a static moment. You're not bisexual at one moment, homosexual at this moment. This thing depends, and it's fluid, and it goes in all different waves. And if you guys actually put a microscope on each of all of y'all's individual lives, you would probably see a similar journey in fluidity. I'm making an assumption there, but I don't care. It's often confounded by discussions of gay versus non-gay identity. And what this means is that in the course of the HIV public health movement, if you look historically, it goes parallel with the gay civil rights movement. So it's within a context of definitions of gay and how that's socially constructed. So much to the point that when black men were not identifying as gay but still engaging in risk or doing something, the paradigm shifted and people started discussing gay versus non-gay identified. And you have to ask yourself, is it really just that binary, gay versus non-gay? There's nothing in between? or you know exactly what's going on. So you have to think about these things. And then finally, the voices of the men are rarely heard in this context. So we published some data from 30 bisexual brothers we interviewed in 2009 in the American Journal of Public Health earlier this year. And I'm just going to present three slides with some quotes on it. One is a couple quotes about bisexual men speaking on disclosure. So one of the gentlemen we asked, why don't they, meaning your female sexual partners, need to know? This participant said, do she only tell or share how many guys she done fucked and what she done did with them? I mean, how many dicks she done sucked? I ain't the first dick you suck, so I mean, you ain't tell me that. So it goes both ways, dude. Now, I interviewed this brother. And I sat there when he said that, and I thought to myself, it's one of those moments where you have your own bias coming as a researcher, and then you have to stop and say, oh, wait a minute, he's making a point. And the point was that people don't always tell the truth about their sexual history, so why should he all the time? Why is he the only one held accountable for that? Another gentleman said, if I had to tell someone, it would be my girlfriend, who I'm laying down in the bed with every night having unprotected sex with. Even though I'm having protected sex with everybody else, if someone needed to know, she would be the first. So again, it's this kind of conditional thing, and again, you see that partner type. The primary partner, I'm going to have unprotected sex. The casual partners, I'm protected. When the men spoke about condom use, most of the stuff that they talked about, why they didn't use condoms, were things like heat of the moment sex, felt so good, didn't fit, it was their primary partner, so on and so forth. And so these are a couple quotes that talked about this. So interviewer asked, what helps you use condom consistently? This gentleman said, Michael said, contracting a disease, I ain't trying to get shit, I ain't trying to give my wife shit, you can use a condom, or you can risk getting a disease, you know what I'm saying? Another gentleman said, I would always use a condom with a woman, but as far as a guy, because a guy can't get pregnant. But I mean, if we are both okay, and we get tested, and both are clean, and after a certain amount of time, I would say a year, and trust has been built, and we trust each other, and we just know that we'll be faithful to each other, and not go out and do nothing crazy, I wouldn't use condoms. And that is a very loaded, loaded quote. Because not only does it say this kind of gender thing, like women can't get pregnant, so or guys can't get pregnant, so I'm more likely to have unprotected sex. But then he kind of goes into this whole litany of the layers of what he's going to do to kind of protect himself, which isn't actually that illogical. We both get tested. We're both clean. We both realize that we're going to stay with each other. You're going to be my boo. I'm going to be your boo, and we're going to boo this up. And then, you know, and then after that point, we can actually have unprotected sex. So it's not that unreasonable. Then if we pull it together on disclosure and condom use, Rodney said, I personally don't think that it's any of their, speaking about his female sexual partner's business. I don't think that a person should be openly telling people about their sex life. Yeah, you are putting that other person's life on the line, but if you're totally safe with both sexes, then, you know what I'm saying, it's nothing to explain or talk about. So if you're using condoms with both parties, what is there to talk about? Is it just kind of an immoral judgment call that you're bisexual and that's not socially acceptable to a heteronormative norm, so therefore we're going to criticize you and say that it's this? It could be that. So in summary, and to kind of contextualize the rest of the talks that we have today, media anecdotes do not equal generalizable epidemiology or, I'm sorry, I said goo, good public health practice. I've said boo so many times, maybe that's what I was thinking about. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. The literature on black bisexual men and HIV is rife with issues and problems. First of all, there's wide sampling variation in definitions, timing, and pooling of these bisexual samples. There's inconclusive associations of same-sex disclosure with safer sex behavior, particularly among black men. The social context of bisexual men's lived experiences are understudied outside of a pathological lens. And then there's only superficial attention that we see given to race, racism, culture, and class. And I would also add masculinity into that. And Sonia's going to talk a little bit more about that. But the whole issue of masculinity, masculine expectations, pressure to live up to some kind of gender role expectation, and its relationship to sexual networks, condom use behavior is extremely important and really hasn't been pushed to the forefront as much as it should. And then finally, the voices of the men themselves need to be heard more. So future directions, start the public health discussion of bisexuality, black men, and HIV, oh my God, with the men themselves. So actually sit the men down and ask them. More research is needed on bisexual men apart from exclusive MSM samples. Please try to shift away the focus from DL and disclosure as a proxy for condom use. The evidence is not there. And whatever evidence there is there that people can tell me, I'm going to bring you as many studies to say that it's not there. It's very inconclusive. Utilize an asset-centered approach, which means instead of talking about a deficits model, what bisexual brothers don't have, how bisexuality is so bad, actually look at the positive things, the facilitators, what's good about it, and then move forward from there. And then focus also on the personal agency with women and all their sexual partners. And I put in here, yes, including their heterosexual men. If only 2% of sexually active black men are bisexually active, even if there's a high proportion of HIV among that 2%, do you think that they're driving all the heterosexual transmission among black women? Or do you think we're actually missing the 98% of heterosexual brothers that are overlooked because we're stuck on stupid? And we don't catch up with the international community that realizes that heterosexual transmission does exist. And then finally, no more Oprah shows on the DL.
Thank you.